This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious, sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. I tried this recently after hearing about it on another podcast, and since then, I've stocked up on boxes and boxes of this and usually use it 1 to 2 times per day. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks. As a coach or an athlete, you will not find a better product that focuses on the essential electrolytes your body needs during competition. Element has become a staple in my own training and something we are excited to offer our coaches and student athletes as well. Element is used by military special forces teams, Team USA weightlifting, at least 5 NFL teams, and more than half the NBA. You can try it risk-free. If you don't like it, Element will give you your money back, no questions asked. They have extremely low return rates. Element came up with a very special offer for you as a listener to this podcast. For a limited time, you can claim a free Element sample pack. You only cover the cost of shipping. For U.S. customers, this means that you can receive an 8-count sample pack for only $5. Simply go to drinkelement.com/Justin Climo. That's drinkelement.com/Justin Climo to claim your free 8-count sample pack. drinkelement.com/Justin Climo.
The Context Podcast is proudly sponsored by Delta Wines and Brick and Mortar, our everyday go-to with sustainability built in. Delta Wines are vibrant yet balanced, made to be enjoyed on special occasions. Brick and Mortar was founded in 2011 and has worked to create the European wine drinker's California wine. The wines are small lot, single vineyard sourced from Napa, Sonoma County, and Mendocino Ridge. In addition to tasting good, they also help you feel good with an eco-friendly packaging and environmental nonprofit donations with every purchase. Buy online at winesforchange.com. Also, use the code CONTACTS to support us and get a discount. The presentation is beautiful, the wines are great, and you'll be supporting saving the earth. What more do you need? Again, that's online at winesforchange.com. Discount code CONTACTS at checkout.
Welcome back to Contacts. We are joined today by the legendary Leo Lopez, who is the vice president of athletics at De La Salle in Concord, California. And he is also the East Bay Athletic League commissioner. Coach, really excited to have you here today. Let's get into this.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
So, as an athletic director, can you take us through your journey that landed you here? How did you end up in athletics at the high school level in general? And what was the process for you ending up in the seat you're in now?
Yeah, no, it's actually a pretty unique story in the sense that I think I heard you on your last podcast say everyone has their own unique identity and their journey. For me, I started coaching basketball in college at De La Salle because Coach Alaco, the legendary coach, was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just going to school. And so I just was helping him out, worked in camps in the summer, pretty normal, just a volunteer. It was, you know, whatever the stipend was back then, a couple $100. I thought it was like, I had a job. It worked out schedule-wise. Then one day, like I graduated from college, St. Mary's College, and they go, what are you doing next year? I said, I got to get a job. That's pretty much what you're supposed to do right after college. Like, that's what my dad told me. Go make some money. Now you're on your own. And they asked me to be an assistant athletic director and keep coaching. And I told them, I got a problem. The only problem I have is I'm going to Europe this summer and next summer. So if I can't do that, I'm going to try to find something else. And they said, not a problem. You can go travel, do your 6-week backpacking tour. And I really said, you're going to pay me to have a job, like in between my 2 European vacations. And that was it. So I committed to that. And then I was assistant athletic director for 7 years. And I think along that time, I began to realize, am I going to coach? Am I going to teach? I taught economics. I taught physical education, computer applications, assistant AD. So I was getting a really good experience. So every year I kept saying, I was going to go work for Google. Honestly, maybe the dumbest move I ever did is not go work for Google, because I figured they were onto something back in the early 2000s. So I looked back and realized I passed up to work for De La Salle. But what got me was mission driven and relationships. I obviously felt comfortable as a graduate of De La Salle. So, you know, and it was always the people that kept me going. One of the defining moments in my life, I was schlepping around the football stadium, moving barricades, pissed off, 100 degrees, the normal thing that we all have to go through, wondering why no one was around to help. And Coach Lattiser, that doesn't really need an introduction, everyone knows who he is, but popped out of the bleachers and literally said the following to me: "You're going to be really good at this job." And I was like, thanks, as I'm slipping, you know, like sweating, moving barricades. I'm like, what is it? In my head, I said, what does that mean? And I said, I thought about it. I talked to him and others, and I got my master's degree at St. Mary's in health, physical education, and recreation. I think it's changed its title. So master's in HPR. And I thought to myself, okay, now I got it. I can either go college, I can go pro, I can go high school. And it worked out. And so that's like that Coach Lattiser, probably 25, 26 years old. I was about to just hang it up. I thought, I've done good work. I've done service. I've coached for 6-7 years. Made a lot of friends, made some good connections. I thought I was done, but I got my master's degree, and that's the way it goes. The next part was the job opened up. I went up to Terry Etzen, who's a longtime defense coordinator, actually celebrating his 40th year here. Mentor of mine, hired me first, all that stuff. And I went up to him and said, how long are you going to be the AD for? Because I'd like to be the AD somewhere. And that year, I don't remember how long ago, but I was in my late 20s, and he said a couple of years. I said, all right, cool. So I started getting my resume ready. I was looking at jobs, different opportunities, fully ready to leave De La Salle, knowing that, hey, this guy's going to be here for a while and it's all good. That year, three jobs opened up at the same time: De La Salle, St. Mary's College of Berkeley, Christian Brothers, I think Justin Sands. So it was all kind of like, ironically, so I just put my name out there. But I knew after going there, the job that I wanted at that time was this job. But one thing I will tell you is I learned that nothing is ever going to be handed to you. I thought maybe I had earned it. Mm-hmm. The principal then gave me, hey, it's open, put your name in there. And it was a long process, probably longer than it actually was day-wise, but it was stressful. I had to work my butt off to get that job. I'm sure there were quality candidates. I don't really know who applied, but I learned there, and it's never take anything for granted and just be working. So long and the short of it, that's kind of how I got to where I am today. Mm-hmm. I'm still here. So I don't know if that kind of gives you the deal.
It's perfect. And I want to pull out a couple of threads there specifically. As you are an alum, you returned to your alma mater, you began doing something just because that turned into a vocation and a calling. And even the legendary Coach Lattiser almost not anointing you, but letting you know and validating, hey, you have a future in this, which had to be inspirational and had to really help ground you. But even with all of that experience and having to jump, not through hoops, but go through a process that you'd been there, you'd seen the movie, but we're still going to make you go through this. You're looking at other jobs. You probably were pretty prepared for this gig. But once you sat down in the chair you're in now, what did you realize right away that you needed to figure out?
Yeah, it's interesting because we just hired a basketball coach who's never been a head coach. You begin to realize as a head coach or anything, all of a sudden moving over 18 inches into the head chair makes a lot of difference. Nothing really changes in terms of like how you, in my mind, accountability, attention to details, all those things, work ethic, all those pillars of success didn't change who I was, but the responsibility shifted for sure. You know what I mean? And I would say this too. I always obviously cared and loved about this place, and I still do, but it became like this, I don't know, this weight on my shoulders. And it wasn't just about football. It wasn't just about basketball or baseball. It was like, I had to carry on the tradition and legacy of many that have come before, maintain the bridge and drive the car down the same road and obviously evolve, look to continually get better, critical thought, all that stuff is a lot different than just saying, go set up for the football game. Like, I was a cog in the wheel for sure. I learned a lot from Coach Etzen, whether he knew he was teaching me directly or not, but I was prepared, but you never know. Just a lot of things happened quickly where you just had to, you know, I felt like I aged 5 years the day that I took the job. And we were under construction. I had to share a desk with the entire coaching staff pretty much because we only had like a 15 by 15, literally, because the locker room was under construction. So I came into this weird, like Terry Edson was banging my chair when he tried to get out. Dude, trying to work here, had to go outside to make phone calls, all that stuff. So as much as I look back at it, it built character, but it was definitely, it's never been, I don't think anywhere you go, it's going to be a smooth road. Yeah. And that one was actually more interesting as I think about it, because it should have been smoother, but it was just a weird era. It was a weird transition. And I've been through a lot over the years, and you can never be taught what you need to know in a book. Mm-hmm. I think if you stay with what you believe in and why you wake up in the morning, it becomes just part of the process. Embrace the journey. And I think there's something to be said about focusing on the byproduct. The outcome is the outcome, but I always wake up every morning. And I'll say this, I don't mean to sound arrogant, because I'm not. I wake up every morning, nothing against you, but I always, like, I look at you as a peer. I wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to outwork everyone in America in my position. And I might not get there, but I'm going to try.
Right.
For you know, sure. And that might not make me live this long on earth, but that's definitely for the people that I represent, for the alum, for the people that are going to come through the school, the people I work with today, it means that much to me. So that's probably my motivating fuel, is I don't want to let anyone down. It's always been my deal. I don't want to let anyone down.
Yeah. And I think you almost have to have that wiring in this role. And what Lattiser was pointing out at you is you got to be willing to do more than your share. You got to be willing to put in the time and lead by example and not do everything for everybody, but you're basically everybody's assistant coach. And so how do you uplift them by doing your job at an elite level to make their jobs easier? I am curious, because you are basically a De La lifer, had a little time away at St. Mary's twice, but you come back every time. And as an assistant AD, as an economics teacher, a PE teacher, a basketball coach, a computer teacher, you are a peer, you are a colleague, right? And now you're moving up the ladder, you're moving over 18 inches. How did you navigate the relationship maintenance that you had to do with those relationships where now they're your direct reports and not just your peers? Can you talk a little bit about that and lessons you've learned from that?
I mean, you lose a lot of friends quickly. You know, I hate to say it, as I was joking with someone the other day, I'm like, don't take this personal, but I can't be your friend anymore. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It made me realize, even as I look back now, I'm 45 years old. When I was younger, I was Coach Lattiser. I was his boss. This is weird. I did have to navigate some legendary coaches that have been there a long time, people that had taught me in class. And the swim coach then was my algebra teacher and my geometry teacher, right? Guy threw chalk at me and whatever to wake up during class. So it's like, I had these relationships. I think we're all put in positions to succeed because of higher power we don't even know about. I think things that I've always lived by is just obviously be respectful, be humble, communicate clearly, but ultimately, like, faith, family. I think when you go that way, I think everyone understands that people's roles change within the community. I've watched people be high level coaches here and then just go into the sunset and kind of hide and go back in the class. So I've seen it like both directions. So I think I had enough to watch. I think ultimately, though, I feel like I've earned the respect of others. So maybe the transition was a little bit simpler than I thought, but it is hard. I grew up with a lot of these guys, and now I'm saying, congratulations, I'm not happy with you, and we're doing that. And this is, you know, but I do think the advantage of being around here has helped us continue to maintain certain mission-driven, certain traditions, so that even if we agree to disagree, there's still an understanding that I'm coming from the right place. Yeah. And I'm not saying that Dale South can't replace me with an outsider or anything like that. It totally could. And there's probably better ideas out there, and that's fine. But I guess I would like, you know, you bring up a good point. I think it's because I wake up every morning with the same goal that I had when I took the job. I'm going to outwork everybody. And when you outwork everybody, the coaches know that you're working. So they're never going to question you, whether they're 52 years old or 17 years old, whatever the case might be. They're like, that guy's freaking working. He's always here. So I think earning street cred, it's allowed me to navigate some interesting relationships.
I learned that really quickly, where I was sitting in my first coaches meeting and I made what I thought was a suggestion, but it was received as a directive. And it was like, wait, time out. Just because I change hats doesn't mean our conversations change, but the reality is it does, right? You're carrying a little different weight when you have those conversations.
Yeah, your perspectives definitely have to be more holistic. Mm-hmm. You got to maintain. I mean, a couple of freshman coaches, coaches I met with them this morning. So I always tell people, if we're talking and you're not the head varsity coach, something's gone horribly well or horribly wrong, because it's everyone's job to do their job here. And as long as things are clearly communicated and executed, We always make mistakes. We probably made 5 mistakes the last 10 minutes we've been talking here. Who knows? But I think we have an authentic team experience here.
Yeah.
A community that believes in the mission that we've outlined. And people want to come to work and people want to get it done. So I think when that changes, I'd probably begin to want to leave.
Right.
But guys like me that are around here are not going to let that change. And maybe there's a secret to success that I don't know about. People always ask me, mm-hmm. but I always just, I'm like, I'm not really sure what you guys are talking about here. We're just trying to work. You know what I mean? And trying to get things done and compete. One of the things I love about this place is we're ultra competitive. And you will not survive here if you're not ready to compete. Spike ball, video games, whatever. Granted, we have, you know, we'll have different divisions, whatever it might be. But I just, but in general, just want to, but I do think there's a love. I think people are loved here. And I think that's what's kept me here.
Awesome. Love it. So since you brought that up, what would you say is the best thing you do at De La Salle, specifically you as the director of athletics and your programs, plural, that you've implemented or you've carried on as a legacy that has the largest ripple effect on the culture that you want?
That's a good question. Being here long enough, I've been able to, you know, I don't know if I'll hit them all, and I don't know which one's more valuable than the other. One of the things that I think was been, if I was to retire today, I think the creation of the Hall of Fame mm-hmm. was a big deal. With our rich tradition and history, we just didn't have the manpower, the time, the effort to create that. I think that not only does it take an opportunity to recognize the past, it solidifies the why here. Mm-hmm. When you hear teams and alum, and there's a lot of practical, bring alum back to campus, keep them, all that stuff. But for me, I love hearing people say, this is why De La Salle is special to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that whole process every year is great. I think some people would say facilities is something they would put their hand. I think part of my business degree, my mindset's always continually looking at like critical thought, critical evaluation. How can we do better? Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of space. So I feel like we've done a very good job of working together and building facilities. We have 700, 800 boys playing sports annually. And reality is we only have one gym, one baseball field, but it's because of our community can work together.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's special. That's a real tough question. I think I probably need to take inventory at some point in time and step back. When I interviewed for the job, I came in hot. Like I asked people, how do you interview? I didn't know. I didn't interview for a job. My first job was handed to me, mm-hmm. literally. So I didn't know what to do. And I over-prepared. And I was all freaked out, just like in basketball, right? I was like, okay, versus 2-3 zone, I'm doing that. I just didn't care. Mm-hmm. I had this goal sheet that I put together for my interview. And it was like every aspect of what I was going to do in my tenure. And I remember people coming up to me saying, after the interview, going, dude, like only you would put together like 29 different goals and objectives by year. And so I always look at that every year to this day. And it's funny, a lot of things are checked off the box, mm-hmm. but a lot of it comes down to just really dedicating and committing to the entire athletic department.
Yeah.
The one thing I learned from the beginning, I was never going to be the football athletic director. I wasn't going to build the relationship you talked about. If all I did was go to football games, that wasn't going to build the sport of lacrosse on our campus or rugby or give love to the basketball team or whatever. And so that, we going backwards, I never thought moving over 18 inches meant I couldn't really specialize.
Yep.
I had to be a man for all, essentially.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect segue to this idea that I don't want to say I've been wrestling with, I've been more observant about it. So my office sits right outside the pool. So I get to watch water polo practice and aquatics. And I'm a basketball coach, the gym's right here. Yeah. But this idea of sport discipline and how we generally cultivate our mentors are usually coming from the same sport that we're involved with. But what I've found, especially in these last 4 or 5 years, is that you can learn as much as a basketball coach from the water polo guy as you can from another basketball coach. So what would you say you've learned watching these other teams, since you're not specializing anymore, that you've been able to share across, like, hey, Johnny, I saw the water polo team do this. I think it could really help you. Maybe you should check in with him. What are some of those, if you have any, that stand out over the years that you've been able almost to cross-pollinate or suggest, or if you were a coach again, you would definitely be cross-pollinated?
Yeah, I think one of the things, first of all, that was key to many breaks I got along the way that I didn't learn. When we didn't have a golf coach, mm-hmm. and I was forced to coach golf. Literally additional duties assigned by your boss. You know what I mean? And I'm like, what do I really know about golf? Except for the fact that I go out there once in a blue moon, have some fun with my buddies. And I didn't know. But what I learned, aside from learning to love the game of golf in general, was how to handle individual sports. I only knew team sports. Mm-hmm. But learning how to handle individual sports, but technically looking for team championships, that was huge for me. So that's kind of where I had both backgrounds, was I don't think a lot of people that are athletic directors, they don't get that, right? You're like football guy, and you're like, I don't understand the cross country runner. You know what I mean? One of the other breaks I'd say is because Terry Edson was the athletic director and defensive coordinator, basically at 2 o'clock, I was in the office just like, hey, they'd come and talk to me. I'd be like, okay, no problem. Back then I learned a lot because I had to do it. I had no choice. I had to go try to find the tennis bylaw for the tennis coach. The guy was, he's prepping for not, you know, that was in the years of the streak. So you know, I had to like answer calls for ESPN and be like, let me find out the answers. But the crossover stuff, one thing hasn't changed. First of all, focus on the process. Number one, I do think a lot of people are still focused on the outcome. Valuing intrinsic reward more than extrinsic reward seems to lead, in my opinion, leads to more extrinsic stuff. And I like a Dale Suck because obviously we're a faith-based school. But when you focus on mind, body, soul, I feel like the coaches that do that the best end up winning the most. Mm-hmm. Or at least having the most success, peace of mind in general. Just like Coach Wooden, success is a peace of mind, which is the direct result of the self-satisfaction. You did your best, the best you're capable of becoming. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is a mantra that I've learned. Dale Sal has high expectations. We all know that. You from afar, it would be weird if you saw our team in last place in league. It would be odd. But ultimately, for me, I've always tried to tell coaches of both sports, set your goals, intermediate goals, long-term goals. But ultimately, like, it's communal, right? Get everybody involved in the process. From a coaching standpoint, I think one of the things I've learned is head coaches need to be the best managers, and they need to put themselves in position to succeed. Meaning, like, we just hired the basketball coach. First thing I told him, staff and schedule. I don't care about what offense you're running right now. Staff and schedule. Because then you can build your plan. You need to surround yourself with great people. Nobody can do it on their own. I don't care what they, and it, as it evolves, the way high school sports are going, which I'm sure that's probably a wrap-up question for you, it's not getting simpler. It's getting more complicated. So I think there's that. I met with an assistant freshman coach today, and I told him, the beautiful part about coaching lower levels is that you can teach a kid a skill, and you can see it really quick at the like freshman JV levels, because they didn't know how to properly reverse pivot, or they didn't realize how to follow through on a backhand in tennis. You can really focus. Teaching a kid a skill goes a long way. Mm-hmm. And it means a ton. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And the difficulty is, how do you teach that skill? And how do you find that? I would say that one thing that we're really good at here is respecting the individual. Mm-hmm. And every team is different. Just because we won X amount of championships in a row, every team's chapter is unique. And every coach is challenged here to make sure that, sure, don't get me wrong, we're not going to change things completely, but just because pounding it up the middle worked when we had an All-American fullback, he goes, it doesn't mean you keep doing that. You can't be a hammerhead. So I think the common denominator is focus on education of your sport, education. You're going to end up with a lot of winning traditions.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I think the idea that you mentioned, focus on the process, the coaches that are most focused on the intrinsic piece of relationship and growing human beings, generally find more success or peace of mind in the way in which you phrased it. So with that, how would you say that your approach to both coaching and your role as the athletic director have changed over the years?
Oh, that's a good question. As a coach, I think you're probably the same way. The little things aren't as big anymore. Mm. If that makes sense. Crap, we forgot the balls, or we don't have everything perfect. We didn't watch 2 hours of film. I think some of the things that were like 911 fires and looked like huge hurdles, and then you look back at it, you're like, why was I so worked up over that? But I think part of that's maturity. You learn how to prepare, learn how to analyze where to put your time in. But it's complicated. As athletic director, I still think the key thing is building relationships.
Right.
And so I spend a lot of time, I think my wife would kill me because I know she knows this. Is my number one belief is make myself available, understand the parents, understand the students, understand the coaches, what they need, what they want. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of communication. I'm not really big into, I'm not the best texter. I'm the worst texter. I didn't text you back for 3 months. You know what I mean? So I think finding effective communication for everybody and offering opportunities for people to feel like they're part of the process. And I never let everybody get their own way. Let's be real. The assistant frost coach is not going to tell me what time they're going to practice. I'm going to talk to the head coach. But I do think that just offering opportunities to have the communication is key. So what's been complicated? I think the communication, as much as we have, the demands have gone on the job. If we get an AD that makes it in our world past 3 years, I'm impressed. And a coach that makes it 5 years, I'm like, okay, this is good. I'm fearful for what will be in high school sports mm-hmm. in terms of opportunity, in terms of quality. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a have and have not segment of the world. And I think there's just a lot of hurdles. I'm really concerned because ultimately we're all here for students. Of course, we're motivated by winning championships and getting kids to college. But ultimately, I think when the day is done, you got to take inventory and say, why am I doing this? Yeah. I always ask coaches every year, is your why the same? Where are you going to be? What's your short-term goal? I don't take offense to it. Justin goes, hey, man, I don't know if I got another year in me. And I'm happy that communication's up there because why isn't it there? How can I support you? I didn't have any assistants. So let's start working on getting new assistant coaches. Yep. You know what I mean? Or all those things that I think that most people take for granted. If you can get coaches to commit just by doing little things, mm-hmm. My job is easier.
One of the things that Jean Ashton said when I had her on the pod, she was actually talking about the conversations we have with our fellow athletic directors about, hey, why are you doing that? Why aren't the coaches going to do that? And it's because if I do this, then it ultimately makes my job easier because their job is easier. And so why wouldn't we do this and serve the way in which it is going to not only uplift our coaches' experience, our athlete experience, our school experience, but ultimately it's also making my job easier down the road.
Honestly, I would tell you, I've had good years and I've had bad years. I've had good relationships. I had bad relationships. I think the hardest part is, especially with COVID, I don't know how many positives you get in our job on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Thankless, as we all know. And it's not, I've gotten past like that guy's disrespectful. They won't even understand how much I've done for him. It's the whole father forgive them for they not know what they do scenario, including parents too. But it's also caused me to get a little probably crusty. And more matter of fact over the years. Like I introduced our new basketball coach and I told the kids, moving forward, don't email me. Email Coach Schroeder. Why? Because he's a coach. So Coach Schroeder, that's your job. I think like I get accused of, and I hear it a lot, education's got too business-like now. But when we went from athletics is a $1 billion industry, high school running in itself, mm-hmm. and it is a business. Mm-hmm. But it's a business mission-driven where you want it. There's different what measures of success. Mm-hmm. And I think, but ultimately, yeah, I got to have pre and postseason meetings. I got to have evaluations. I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to fundraise. I got to do all that stuff. But ultimately it's for one thing. I will always do what's best for students. That's why I'm guided by my decision. Absolutely. And if I don't agree with the coach, it is what it is. And so we don't have a blow up helmet. And I'm not, no offense to anybody who does. It's just for me, why do I want to drop $4,000 on a blow up helmet? Mm-hmm. So they can run through it for 10 seconds. To me, take the $4,000 and do it something different with that, whatever it costs. Anyways, so I think we're a little bit, here's the deal. We have a little bit of blue collar old school, although I don't think most people would think that. Mm-hmm. But I do know that we have stuck to our guns. And I think there's something to be said about sticking to your guns too. Continuity and consistency is, I don't know, maybe a few years down the line, or when I step away, mm-hmm. maybe that's one of the things I would say was one of the secrets to success.
Yeah. For sure. All right, let me pivot on this. Since we're talking a lot about how things have evolved and how you're constantly looking to find kind of the next thing to help improve, what is something that you've most recently changed your mind on that was intentional, right? Like I used to believe this over here and now I'm over here and here's why.
These are real good questions, man. I used to believe year-round grind daily all the time was the only way. Outwork your opponent was the way you're going to win. I have a different thought on that, even for coaches. I think I'm more cognizant of like, effective use of practice time, effective use of my time with coaches. I'm definitely not a let's be around each other nonstop frat house sort of like work, like space is important. I don't know if that makes sense. I used to think like we got open gym every day. It's the way it goes. Yep. We're playing 100 games in the summer. So we're doing it. I don't think that's the same anymore. Like I'm a believer. I voted to get rid of spring football every year for the last 10 years. I think it's a waste of time. Right. I also know that I'm in a minority, I believe, where I like our point guard to play tennis. Yep. You know, I used to think, oh, our point guard better. And I've never been a single sport only guy, but I used to be like, he's a Division I recruit. Now I'm like, whatever, go play tennis. Who cares? And it's not that I'd never encouraged it, but there comes a point where your Division I quarterback, should they or should they not be playing basketball? The answer is no problem. Doesn't matter. Still going to get a Division I scholarship.
Correct. I love that answer. First of all, I'm a big proponent of that. One of the non-negotiables in my household is you're playing three sports and you're going to figure it out. They all offer some different value to you and different roles you may play. But I think the youth sports industrial complex, as I call it, you just said it's a billion-dollar business, has misinformed that there's only one path and has not properly informed that many, if not the majority of those college situations, they're not predetermined, coach, but there's a path for some people that come out into this earth a little differently. And ultimately, right, you can work your way into some of those situations, but you should be experiencing everything because it's only going to add value to that experience. So I love that answer.
No, and I would say this too. Like, I think I used to really believe, how do you measure success? I think those variables have changed. And don't get me wrong. I like to hang a banner like anybody else, but I feel like I can evaluate better. Even when we win, I still am hypercritical and can call our season a failure. And I know I would have never said that 5 or 10 years ago. Because I think I look at it like, did you answer faith, scholarship, integrity? And if you failed, even if we won and you missed the boat, you're a bunch of jerks and we still won. And for me, they're, no matter whether you win or lose, you're still going to end up being a Dale Sal graduate. And I want you to be a better person in the end. And obviously co-curricular activities are super important and I'm 100% behind it. But sometimes we get, it's really hard to keep us on the straight and narrow of what's the common end goal. What are we trying to get here? And communicating that to the parents, they don't believe me 90% of the time, but I'm like, all right, that's what I'm telling you. So I think those are, and I will tell you this. I used to believe that you could not be businesslike, but I disagree now. Like I need a head coach who's an administrator who understands the complexities of the world of we're living in today.
Yeah, for sure. No, I love all those answers. And I think the real takeaway here is that you're constantly evolving. And if you're still holding on to things that you believed in 1995, then, you know, you're probably missing something. Now, it doesn't mean you can't maintain some principles, but ultimately some of those things evolve and you got to evolve with the times. I'm going to finish with this, coach, since I know you're busy and you got to get back out there. If you were starting over today, what advice would you have for your younger self?
That's a great question. I definitely would still start off with commit and wake up in the morning and be the hardest worker in America in your position. Set the goals based on that. I would, but the younger self, I would also say family work-life balance. I started single. I might have been engaged, but started single essentially. No kids. I probably would have done more family friend stuff. There are a lot of times I know as a fellow coach, it's like, I miss my buddy's whatever bachelor party, or I miss that guy's birthday party. I would have put a little bit more emphasis on family work life balance. Because there's some experiences that I missed that I probably should have taken advantage of. I grew up really fast getting my position in my late 20s.
Yeah.
I was young. You know what I mean? And I was like, nope, not going on that trip to Vegas with my boys because I can't. I got a game. I want to be there. So I kind of gave up some of the stuff and not because it was bad. It was just, I made choices. So I matured real quick. So I would go back and the other thing too, I've done a very bad job of celebrating success and taking a moment to smile because it's like the next season, the next thing. And I would probably tell myself to slow down and learn how to enjoy the overall ride.
Awesome. Awesome. Such great answers, coach. I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us today and drop some knowledge.
This podcast was also brought to you by teachhoops.com. As coaches, our inboxes get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. Teachhoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down a Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at teachhoops.com and mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It is a delicious, sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. I've been using Element Recharge for the last few months after hearing about it on another podcast, and since then, I've stocked up on boxes and boxes. I usually use it 1 to 2 times per day. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your very best. Plus, it has zero sugar, artificial ingredients, or other junk you simply do not want. Speaking of performance, the best performers in the world use Element. I'm talking about Team USA weightlifting, NBA teams, NFL teams, and Navy SEALs. The list goes on. Element can expand your limits too. Want more energy while low-carb dieting or intermittent fasting? Want to crush that next workout? Or want to just be ready for the next workday? Element has the electrolytes to make this happen. And with 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one that will satisfy your taste buds. They just released their latest flavor, grapefruit, and it has quickly become one of my favorites. Element came up with a fantastic offer for us. Just go to drinkelement.com/justinclimo to claim your 8-count free sample pack.